Turkey, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A minute past the hour, and let me begin the program this evening with apologies. I don't like to miss the program. I generally don't take vacation days. I don't take vacations. But when life in itself intervenes, sometimes there's nothing to be done but what one has to do. And that's what happened yesterday. We are experiencing some medical difficulties with a member of our family, and hopefully everything will be okay. And so that occasioned my absence yesterday evening, and for that I apologize, but I trust that you do understand that, well, the family matters, and, you know, this isn't, you know, I'm not like Rush Limbaugh and keep anybody in a pit. It puts the lotion on its skin. No. So hopefully that won't happen again. Hopefully that which we need, to wit, appropriate medical care, will be delivered. Hopefully. So, thank you for your forbearance. It is much appreciated. Program reminder, no programs next week. I'll be gone to Atlanta for a meeting on behalf of Coal River Mountain Watch. And so, I'm sorry, but it will just be sort of in rerun hell. Dr. Bill will be live, God willing. Dog willing, flying spaghetti monster willing, Allah, inshallah, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. May Ganesh smile upon us all. Yes, you know, may the holy fire of Ahura Mazda, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So, as a reminder, we've been trying all this week with relative degrees of success to raise 2 weeks of funds in 1 week so that I can get bills paid before I get out of here, and or even pay them along the way as the case may be, with a relative degree of success. And toward that end, I want to extend tremendous thanks to Chris in Germany, who, even though her challenge went unanswered on Monday evening, we sort of laid a goose egg Monday, has re-extended it for this evening. Thank you very kindly, Chris. And another challenge has arrived to join it, courtesy of Peggy, far, far, far off in the sandbox. So that having been said, there are $300 worth of challenges on the table. If we can get one at 300, two at 150, three at 100, six at 50, 12 at 25, et cetera, then your money will be doubled. Okay? Your money will be doubled. So that's that is an extremely generous offer that helps us considerably in our fundraising efforts. And a reminder, my travel is not part of this. We're just talking about keeping the bills paid here. So, you know, it's out there. And if we could do that, if $300 came in and $300 matched it, then we would be a lot further toward the 2 weeks' worth of fundraising than we are now, because we've got about $1,100 to go, between $1,100 and $1,200 to go. And we've got two nights to do that in. Right. So we'll cross our fingers. It's, I don't know, throw salt over our shoulders, or I'm sorry, I'm really, really bad with superstition. Probably why I'm no good at religion either. But the PayPal interface is over at headonradionetwork.com. And it's pretty easy. All you got to do is fill in the basics, and you can leave blank that screen about what it is you do and where you do it and what you do it for, and your shoe size and all that foolishness. Just get to the next screen, and that's where you can go to your PayPal account or use a credit card. I think we take everything but Diners Club. PayPal does. And if you prefer to use the U.S. Postal Service, as a couple of folks have, thank you very kindly to GK and to Rusty. Well, the mailing address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. And thank you very kindly as well to our subscribers, who also took a chunk out of what has been missing this week and made it possible. Well, the big part of the reason, thank you, Joan, among others, out in Talibandiana. That's why we're at $1,100 to go, and, you know, not $1,300. Thank you, one and all, very much. And we've got our first $50 toward the challenge, $250 to go. Thank you very, very kindly. Let's see. It's about 8 minutes past the hour on this Thorn in the Side Thursday, and it's a sad one. And I don't, you know, strange how the death of someone in popular culture affects us. There's been an outpouring of sympathy and grief all day long for the passing of Prince. Just simply Prince. Who burst onto the American musical scene back in, what, 1979, 1980? And turned a whole lot of genres right upside down. He apparently became gravely ill last week, and his plane touched down in Atlanta, and he was hospitalized over what were called flu-like symptoms. God only knows what, well, there's that word. No one, who knows what that means. But today, his lifeless body was found in an elevator at Paisley Park Studios in Minnesota. I suppose we feel this way, and it's nothing new. The greatest generation was stunned and shocked and dismayed when Glenn Miller's aircraft went down in Europe during the Second World War. We attach meaning. Art brings us closer together, whether it be paint, music, film, photography, poetry, literature. It's one of those things that makes us human. more so. Oh, by the way, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Damn. But, you know, as much or more than the wheel or fire or agriculture, art is what makes us so essentially human and reminds us of our common bonds. So I've got a courtesy of Ron and Raleigh, I've got a track for a bumper here later. But as far as Prince is concerned, you know, there was a lot to inspire. There was a lot to kind of also a lot to, but you know, don't speak ill of the dead and all of that. But there was, we look past things like bizarre religiosity and whatnot, and consider the man in full, as it were. He's a little guy, about 5 feet tall, 5 feet two, and being a person of small stature, he was bullied throughout his youth and his school days. At one point in time, he said that's what made him behave outrageously. He became a musician because he wasn't allowed to touch his daddy's piano because he wasn't as good on the piano as daddy. So when daddy wasn't home, the young man sat down and taught himself piano. He was self-taught in every instrument he played. And that, too, is amazing. But, of course, autodidacts are often the ones who wind up forging the paths and showing the way. You can listen to Prince, and he's Prince. I mean, he's nobody but Prince. But you also listen to Prince and you think, yes, he got on that path that Jimi Hendrix wore down through the brush, and Sly Stone and George Clinton, it stood on the shoulders of giants. So if you're out there feeling sad over Prince's death, you are certainly not alone. And it would have been really, it would have been kind of cool to see what happened when he turned into an elder statesman of rock and roll. Very cool indeed, but that won't happen. Note from Ron in the, kind of squishy north. Maybe there's a little thaw going on. I'm sure he'll tell me in a minute. I get to listen for a little while this evening. Whoopee! It's been a dry week of Bobisms this week, and next week will be even worse. Ron himself is off to the sandbox. He's got his, last I checked, he's got his copy of the second part of the Takeshi Kovacs trilogy ready to roll for the long flight. Ron also points out, Dr. Savas Dimopoulos, a leading physicist at the CERN complex, once said something that resonated with me. Why do humans do science? Why do they do music? Why do they do art? The things that are least important to our survival are the very things that make us human. Indeed. And, you know, the counterpoint to that would be the old Zen saying that I remember picking up from Dr. John along the way, that before enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. After enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. We have things that make us prosaically human, And then there are things that make us extraordinarily human. Of course, even with something like the passing of what do you call Prince? A rock and roll icon, a funk icon, a soul icon. Why don't we call him an icon? Yeah. Why don't we call him a musical genius? But with the passing of someone like Prince, naturally, this being Thorn in the Side Thursday, we can always look to the folks over at Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, to screw it all right up. You take it away, team.
Stacey Dash is an actress and Fox News contributor, slammed, as we all are, by the sudden death of one of pop music's biggest stars. Stacey?
Yes, I'm in shock. He was an icon, and what I remember the most about him was that he was someone that transcended time. You know, when you were around him, you just felt like time didn't exist, and he was so innovative, and you didn't look at him as a black artist or an artist of any color. He was just Prince, and his music just resonated with everyone.
No, that really happened. That's not some SNL parody or anything. No. No, Stacey Dash just took Prince's blackness away from him. Because, you know, being black in that cultural musical heritage tradition, that had absolutely nothing to do with his musical genius. Why, he would have been awesome if he was just whiter than Castile soap and spent his life writing minuets. Yeah, you didn't see him as black. Well, I kind of did. And in a way that was... Look, when you're growing up in Alabama, and the white redneck boys are driving around blasting Prince out of the customized speakers in their 1971 Chevrolet pick-em-up trucks, you know something is happening. You know somebody is breaking barriers, just knocking down walls. When a guy in cowboy boots and jeans and a flannel shirt is standing in the record store with his cowboy hat on, humming Raspberry Beret, you know that something's happened. But no. Over on Fox, Prince can't be a black man. Stacey Dash won't let him. Well, I hate that it had to happen, but you just kind of knew that Fox News would screw it up. And of course, with me having been gone yesterday, we missed both prayer meeting Wednesday and the the post mortem, if you will, to the New York primary. Why, yes, Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions. Yes, as a matter of fact, yes. Carol asks, Castile soap, isn't that what they put in enemas? Stacey Dash, enema of the race. oh my, yes. Meanwhile, a note coming in from from Ron and Raleigh. So far, we have started. It's kind of a Ronish night. Ron and Raleigh says, "I've got one thing to say." "Only one, Ron? Really?" "Piss on Stacey Dash. Just because she doesn't want to be black, she needs to leave Prince alone." I mean, what is the point of saying something like that? Does everything at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda have to be geared toward stroking the tender, delicate fifis? If only we were doing video, you'd see me here. My right hand is stroking the imaginary little wingnut's head, the imaginary little Fox viewer's head, you know, Emery's head, Marveline's head, and reassuring them that they're okay in their whiteness. "It's all right, sugar. It's gonna be okay." You. Marty, meanwhile, with an email, says, "How might John Keating, Robin Williams' character from Dead Poets Society, say it about Prince's sound and artistry? These are what we stay alive for." And by the way, Marty adds, "Remember Stacey Dash's main claim to fame, Alicia Silverstone's best friend Cher in Clueless. Alicia Silverstone was Cher. She wasn't acting stupid. She just is." Meanwhile, Brother Deacon Asa, out in the socialist workers' paradise of Vancouver, says, "This Stacey Dash Fox News blunder harkens back to their infamous announcement about UConn winning the NAACP basketball championship." Oh my God. Thank God I had something. Thanks something. He, she, it. I have you guys. Yeah. UConn won the NAACP basketball championship. Yeah. Because as far as they're concerned, you know, it is. And with that being the case, it is. Here, let's travel down to. Let's travel down to Treason Central, you know, South Carolina Stan, and check in with Sheriff Chuck Wright of Spartanburg County, South Carolina, shall we? Back on April 7th, Sheriff Chuck Wright of Spartanburg County, Spartanburg, South Carolina, addressed the Greenville Spartanburg Republican Women's Association meeting, at which point he felt it necessary to confirm the worstest fears of the Greenville Spartanburg Republican Women's Association Committee Club. Now, I don't know how this works into an address. I mean, you're the sheriff, okay? You're a county sheriff in South Carolina, Stan. And so you stand there before the Greensburgville Spartan Boroughburg whatever Republican Women's Club Association meeting, and I mean, okay, let's play a game. You're the sheriff of Spartanburg, South Carolina. And you're addressing the Greenville Spartanburg Republican Women's Association meeting of Patriotic Females Club. What are you going to talk to them about? Crime? South Carolina's probably a lot like other states, where the sheriff is also in charge of county tax collections. Maybe you could talk about the county tax revenues. No, sorry. So he stepped up there to the little microphoned podium there at the table, talking to the, you know, down to the Howard Johnsons or the back room at the Ryan's All You Can Eat food trough, and probably adjusted a little bit. Got to haul the belt up over the belly there. I said, I think the most racist people in America right now sometimes are minorities. Small group minorities. I got a chaplain who works for me. He's an African American. He is my brother. And I love him more than anything. He doesn't buy into that mess. Bunch of his friends don't either. They don't do the NAACP. Because I feel like that is a racist group as well as the KKK. I don't care about them either. I don't want to be part of no group that's got something to do just because of your color. I don't think they're right. I think that if we would quit worrying about Democrats or Republicans and just love our neighbors as God told us to, we're gonna be better. We're just gonna be better. Time out, Jack, okay? Time out, okay? Hint. Thank you, Randy and PA. Thank you very kindly. It's okay, Bob. Everything's going to be all white. Right. Oh, you guys are on a roll. So when you are talking about an African-American chaplain, I think using a possessive form of a verb, the verb to have, in a place like South Carolina, Stan, is probably not a good idea. In other words, if you say, I've got a chaplain... I have a chaplain, I possess a chaplain, I own a chaplain, I've got a chaplain. No, don't do that. Don't do that. Not even when you're talking to the Greenville Spartanburg Republican Women's Meeting. No, don't do that. Listen, as a practitioner of the art of word knowing, let's see if there's any other way to say that. There is a chaplain who works for me. He's an African American. What? By Jove! Problem solved. And suddenly you don't sound like old Marse Chuck Wright down on the plantation. I've got a chaplain. Okay, so then there's, I don't want to be part of no group that's got something to do just because of your color. I think if we would quit worrying about Democrats or Republicans and just love our neighbors as God told us to. Is it just me, or did good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, homosexual, fundamentalist Sheriff Chuck Wright of Spartanburg, South Carolina, just equate political parties with skin color? Because I'm pretty sure he did. Yeah, wow. So, thanks very kindly, Brother Deacon Asa, for the reminder about the NAACP basketball championship. Whoop! Band-Aid, quit sniffing glue. There's a political independent running against Schiff, Chukrat, by the name of, because, of course, you know, Russell Lynch. Actually, Lynch is just an old, perfectly decent Irish surname. Russell Lynch is running against Schiff Chukrat for Scherf, or as we say around here, Ha Scherf. He said Wright's remarks were not conducive to solving these problems and addressing those issues and building those relationships with anybody, minorities included. Well, ain't that mighty white of you to include the minorities? He continued and said, it's an embarrassment to law enforcement for a law enforcement professional to sum a group like the NAACP up as being a racist organization, because the group I've been dealing with in Spartanburg, they've been nothing but good people. Well, that's true. And, of course, this is a trope that you hear repeated at time after time after, you know, if you go over into the cesspool part, the sort of fetid, stinking, stagnant, swampy part of Facebook, you know, where the Republicans and the birthers and deathers and ninthers and tenthers and baggers and birchers and booger eaters and members of the toenail clipping toothpick club hang out, you'll find that, well, the NAACP just like the Klan. Do by all means tell me the next time a group of hooded members of the NAACP ride through downtown Whiteville, pull a number six and drag a white man out in the middle of the night, stick a burning cross in his front yard and hang him from the nearest tree. Let me know when that happens. Sheriff Chukrat later had to walk things back because he suddenly remembered this here is an election, y'all. And he said, old Russell Lynch, he's right. The Spartanburg NAACP chapter, now they try to help everybody. Mm-hmm. There's a very small group within that group. They're divisive, and I don't buy into that mess. Mess, by the way, for those of you who don't speak Southern, mess is a word that they like to that they tend to use if they don't want to word if they're afraid that the Eternal Almighty will strike them dead with a bolt of lightning if he catches them saying the word shit out in public. Mm-hmm. I don't care about any group or any person who doesn't respect you just because of whatever color God made you. But he still don't care much for that NAACP. And that Al Sharpton. Sometimes it's fun just to let, because all you got to do with these freaks is put the nickel in and walk away. Speaking, however, of the NAACP, champions of basketball in 2014, let's go one state north, shall we? To North Carolina Stan, which is having its own problems, because after a post that was taken as factual but wasn't, that said that NBA Commissioner Adam Silver had decided to pull the 2017 NBA All-Star Game out of Charlotte, North Carolina, well, that turned out to be a hoax. But as documented here on this here program, no less than Charles Barkley, who has rather a significant platform for expounding upon his views on the TNT NBA coverage, Charles Barkley called for the game, the All-Star game, to be moved out of Charlotte. Well, lo and behold, there was a press event earlier today in which NBA Commissioner Adam Silver was no longer able to evade the issue of good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, homosexual, Christian, North Carolinian, conservative, Republican's obsession with who goes to the potty when and where. There was a presser today at which Commissioner Silver said, "We've been, I think, crystal clear. A change in the law is necessary for us to play in the kind of environment that we think is appropriate for a celebratory NBA event." He went on to say that he would like to be a good faith partner with North Carolina and local businesses to find a solution to the potty problem. The potty problem that isn't a problem at all. And you know what? Why don't we... Solution... Oh, this is easy. Why don't we just pass a law requiring businesses and schools and whatnot to put in a bigots-only restroom? I guess we'd have to do male and female bigots, but then they could go in and go potty all by them bigoted selves. And maybe we could follow up with some bigots-only water fountains and a bigot section of the lunch counters. And wait a minute. But... we don't want to put a gun to their head, but they know what's at stake in terms of the All-Star game, he said. Jesus God. And, of course, the issue will not go away. Not because of the big, bad, mean trans people, but because of, bigots. Oh, by the way, I learned a new word today. You might find this interesting. I learned a new word today. The word is silverbacks. Apparently, this is a word that arises out of feminist theory, and I think it's rather creative at the very least. When a male gorilla gets old enough, he gets that silverback thing going on, and he exercises dominance and control over the group. Well, apparently, in feminist theory now, bigoted right-wing patriarchal males are referred to as silverbacks. I guess that's because in academic circles, just calling them assholes is deemed sort of, recherché? But I kind of like it, silverbacks. So just kind of keep an eye out for it. It'll probably sneak into common parlance somewhere along the way, so don't be surprised. But back to the NAACP for a moment. It was this past weekend, almost a week ago now, that the Reverend William Barber II, who is the leader of the NAACP in North Carolina, stand, tried to do the unspeakable. He tried to fly while black. You might remember that the Reverend William Barber II is the man who founded Moral Monday civil disobedience actions over a series of pernicious right-wing legislative efforts. Well, according to the Charlotte Observer, this past Friday, almost a week ago, Reverend Barber tried to get on in American Eagle Flight 5382. He suffers from a disability, Reverend Barber does. He purchased two tickets so that he could be comfortable. He had bone fusion surgery as a result of arthritis. That is when the silverback, well, we'll just call him an asshole, behind him began muttering and mumbling about those people all the time wanting to take up two seats on the airplane. And Reverend Barber said, as I heard these things, I became more and more uncomfortable, especially since he was behind me. The attitude with which he spoke and my experiences with others who have directed similar harsh, sometimes threatening words, emails, and calls at me came to my mind. I asked him why he was saying such things, but I said he did not know me, my condition. I added that I would pray for him. Oh, no, I don't want none of your black prayers. That's when the airline attendants called on security to escort Reverend Barber off the plane. And that's the point in this story where you say, well, you know, at least they didn't tase him or pepper spray him or, you know, murder him. So do we have this all nailed down? A normally abled white guy starts pissing and moaning about a disabled black man who has purchased two seats on the aircraft, which was in no wise affecting the ability of the bigot behind him to fly in comfort. Well, okay, nobody flies in comfort anymore in America. But, you know, to get what he paid for, let's put it in economic terms. And the disabled black guy is the one who gets removed from the plane. Meanwhile, from the Stay Classy Department of the Republican Party, issued a statement saying, I guess Reverend Barber thinks it's moral to inconvenience other passengers wanting to get home to see their families, because he once again thinks his right to say and do whatever he wants is more important than other law-abiding citizens who conduct themselves under society's rules of civil behavior. That's Michelle Nix, the vice chair of the North Carolina Republican Party. Michelle Nix has not, upon being informed that Reverend Barber, acting within the economic rules of our country, had purchased two seats for himself. Upon being informed of this, Michelle Nix, vice chair of the state Republican Party in North Carolina, did not offer a retraction or an apology. Because, of course, we all understand that in the eyes of a Michelle Nix or various and sundry other upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, gundamentalist, amosexual, birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, birchers, and booger-eaters, and members of the toenail-clipping toothpick society, Reverend Barber was being uppity. Yes. Uppity.
because black. Right? And on and on and on it goes. But that's not the only airline story. Wait, let's run back to the email bag. Ron and Molly says, racist? Do these poltroons ever look up racist or racism in the dictionary? Give it a look, see, why don't you, fellas? Randy then notes, since I mentioned the fellow named Lynch who's running against Sheriff Cracker, Leslie Lynch King. I wonder why he had to change his name to Gerald Ford. Lynch King. President Lynch King. No. Hell, he had a hard enough time to do... Well, he almost got reelected as President Ford. Ron then asks about Sheriff Cracker. Do you think the sheriff knows that the NAACP was started by progressive whites and blacks? No, I'm guessing that's a no. Yeah, because them whites was self-hating whites, you understand, as traitors to their race. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, James up in Illinois says, but I want to sit next to the bigots. Sorry, Bob. To me, shooting down their facts is a sport. And I understand that. Yeah, I'm just, I've lost patience for it. Michael just asks, this is Michael in Sebastopol. What airline? American Eagle. That's their off-brand shuttle flight, you know, little regional jump jet kind of American Eagle. That's the one where if you go to piloting school and you get to be a pilot, they put you on those little regional flights and just zip you back and forth between Pixley and Bug Tussle all day and pay you about the same thing that a manager at Taco Bell makes. American Eagle. Yeah. I know, and God knows I know you've seen it on... seen some of it over on my Facebook page. Even, and you know, the conversations we're having politically are pretty clearly pro-Bernie. And look, I'm not bailing on Bernie. You know, I'm not going to come up with something crass and shitty like the Hilarians did in 2008 when they started calling themselves Pumas, when it was pretty clear that Barack Obama was going to whip her ass. Okay, let's subtract the ass. When it was pretty clear that Barack Obama was going to whip her. We'll take care of that on the edit for the podcast. Staff, take a note. But even though it was clear that she was going to lose the nomination to Barack Obama in 2008, the hardcore Hilarians created something they called Puma. And I always thought of Pete Puma, you know, not the brightest knife in the drawer. And you kind of had that skeevy look. Remember Pete Puma? That's who they always reminded me of. But no, Puma stood for Party Unity My Ass back in 2008. And that's what a whole bunch of Hilarians subscribed to. Because, by God, they were going to have Hillary Clinton be the president or no president at all. Party unity, my ass. Well, there's nobody out there hollering party unity, my ass, or declaring themselves Pumas for Bernie or anything like that. But there's a lot of people out there hooting and hollering about how, well, you know, he lost New York. I mean, he didn't quit. Of course, then again, when Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton, you know, just came up with one of those popcorn fart squeaker victories in Iowa, they were out there, well, yeah, okay, he's running a nice campaign, but it's time for Bernie to get out. I mean, symbolic campaign. Yeah. And then after he thumped her righteously in New Hampshire, they were right there. Well, okay, he's made his point. I mean, after all, you know, New Hampshire's right next to Vermont, so you know those people don't have any sense. And so what they need to do is Bernie needs to get out now that he's made his point. Okay, and then along came Nevada, and another one of those popcorn fart squeaker victories for which she was becoming notable. And the Hilarians again began to screech and scream and shriek and grumble and bumble and, you know, Bernie, goddamn communist, needs to get out. Doesn't he understand this is the most important presidential election in the history of the Republic? And then came South Carolina. And South Carolina, one of the most ill-educated states in the country, white and black alike, gave their Democratic delegates, none of whom will ever be able to deliver the state of South Carolina for a Democratic presidential candidate in November, overwhelmingly to Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton, and it went up to 11. He's got to get out. Enough already. Doesn't he understand? Can't he see the writing on the wall? Nobody's interested in his commie theories. This is not Denmark. And we will never, ever have universal single-payer health care. But oddly enough, the young people to whom the coming world belongs stuck with Bernie. And he got righteously thumped throughout the poorly educated deep south of the United States, in states again and again and again, where the Democrats will never, ever, if I can use that phrase, there's probably something wrong with my tone, never, ever deliver the state for Dr. First Lady, Senator Secretary Clinton, or any Democratic nominee. Can't they understand? Why can't Bernie Sanders understand? The Confederacy has spoken, and the Confederacy wants Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton to be the Democratic torch standard bearer. Huh. And so, defeated her in Minnesota, in Colorado, in Wisconsin, in Michigan, in Washington, in Wyoming, in Hawaii. God damn it, he's destroying the party. America doesn't vote for socialist commie friends of Fidel Castro. Jesus Christ, haven't you seen those pictures of him with Leon Trotsky? He's got to get out! Or else we'll have President Trump or President Cruzifer. Oh, by the way, have you seen the polls? She whips them both handily. She's definitely going to beat them. Okay, then why does he have to get out? Why can't everybody vote for their preference in the Democratic primary? It is, after all, a nominating process. And it's good for down-ballot candidates, too. Down-ballot Democrats need a vigorous primary to bring voters to the poll, because a lot of voters in America don't have the common good sense that God gave a watered-down flat beer to go out and vote unless there's something sparkly at the top of the ticket. Why does he got to get out? Not necessarily more, Ron, squishy north. Ron says, even more ill-educated than West Virginia, at least we have Mississippi. Oh, shit, we're behind Mississippi, Stan. Yeah, we are. That's because they got a potty bill, see? Earther points out, Rachel Maddow and all the MSNBC pundits were flabbergasted that Bernie's campaign manager, Jeff Weaver, still wanted to go to the convention after New York. It pisses me off. Hi, Bob. Hi, Arthur. Oh, yes, he's got a guy. He's going to destroy everything. He's going to. They'll see the big board! Ay, ay, ay. And yet nobody can explain to me why it is that Hillary Clinton, I mean, is this a privilege argument? I mean, is this a gender thing? Is it something that is it a Clinton rule? Is it something only that Hillary can do, but the Brooklyn-born New York Jew can't? Why is it that she can stay in against a Republican nominee who is going to be a far more formidable candidate in the form of bomber John McCain? At that point in time, we didn't know that he was going to take out his service weapon and shoot himself repeatedly in both feet by choosing Mussolini, Caribou, Barbie, Godzilla from Wasilla as his running mate. He was going to be a formidable opponent to whomever the Democrats nominated. And even back then, Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton was saying, well, clearly I'm the best one to go up against John McCain. And the rest of the nation said, no. And so Barack Obama went on to thump John McCain. She stayed in the race all the way up into June of 2008. With her partisans screaming, party unity, my ass! But if you wander around Facebook, social media generally, what have you, look in the for-profit media, Bernie must get out. Bernie got thumped in New York. Okay, there's four more states that get to vote next week, and after that, there's still more states that get to vote. I get to vote. Don't I get a primary choice? Or do progressives in Appalachia, you know, to wit West Virginia, do we just get to go cheney ourselves? I mean, you'll forgive me if this cry that I am not allowed a choice because the Confederacy has spoken and New York, where a whole bunch of people didn't get to vote for a variety of reasons, some of which are explainable and some of which are rather inexplicable. Yeah, I don't get it. Or I didn't. Until today. Turns out that maybe... Well, okay, so we got to go back a little bit. I remember a time when our dear friend... The sage of Southwest Wisconsin. Would say upon talking about wingnuts on the internet, remember Bob Nicola Post. Yeah, because it turned out wingnuts were getting a Nicola Post, just to go in and troll liberal, progressive, Democratic conversations on the web. Apparently the idea has caught on. Arthur points out Kasich is staying in the race and somehow it's not a big deal, even though he needs something like 140% of the delegates. Well, actually, the parts of the right wing power elite are screaming for Kasich to get out. God knows, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, is doing everything short of exorcisms to try to get John Kasich out of the race. As to Bernie must get out and everyone must now support Dr. First Lady, Senator Secretary Clinton. Carol Baker says, go along, get along. Be a vagina demagogue. That's funny. It's a play on the vagina monologues. Vagina demagogue, you get it? Yeah, it's clever. Meanwhile, Ron in Canada says, what the fuck ever happened to the old mantra, and the truth shall set you free? At the very least, you would think that the average voter can recognize that Bernie is speaking from the heart and Hillary is playing a part. Bernie's enlightened, Hillary's entitled. Cue Stairway to Heaven. I have to go out to the parking lot and use up some of this medicinal herb they prescribed for me. I'll be back. Now, Ron, we don't believe that. You're going out to commune with Reverend Craig, aren't you? So anyway, it happens on my page. I've got a few people, I've had to block them along the way. There's a couple I tolerate yet, who inevitably, if anybody says anything except I want to join the Clinton Borg Collective, I will no longer resist, resistance is futile, assimilate me, will show up on my page. And, you know, just get really snippy and snappy, snarky with people. And over on my Facebook page, it's a personal page, it's not a show page, it's just my personal page. I don't put up with people just being nasty and verbally abusive to each other. I mean, debate the issues. Stay on point. You know, when you get down to the part where either one's calling the other poopy head, it's become a problem. But lo and behold, I understand now. I don't know if it's a nickel a post, but there's an organization out there. The story's out of the Daily Beast. The David Brock, you remember David Brock, he's the guy who smeared Anita Hill. Remember the phrase, a little bit nutty, a little bit slutty? That David Brock. Well, you know, he had this road to Damascus moment where he suddenly realized that he could be a Republican and still be a new Democrat, you know, otherwise known as a center-right Democrat, and saw the error of his ways and declared himself a liberal and founded things like Media Matters for America, which has done good work along the way. Although along the way, Media Matters for America has also treated its workers like shit and tried to defeat efforts to organize within that organization. Well, David Brock created something called Correct the Record. And Correct the Record is a pro-Hillary PAC that has taken in God only knows how many millions of dollars. And remember this about PACs. You know, you can't just form a PAC and then go and build a new wing on the mansion or get a new hangar for the Gulfstream 5. You can't do no. This is not Vietnam. There are rules. But what a PAC can do is it can pay salaries, and it can pay the salaries that it deems the market will bear. So people who form PACs, whether it be Correct the Record or Wolf PAC or you know, Sarah PAC or PAC, provide convenient vehicles for folks to get paid. Okay? I mean, David Brock is not doing this out of the goodness of his heart. The business of America is business. Right? So anyway, it turns out that Correct the Record is making an argument that it can work directly with the Clinton campaign, which PACs are not supposed to be able to do. But Correct the Record is saying, wait, we found it right here. Page 342, paragraph 3, sentence 4, clause 1, footnote 12. Oh, yeah, Clinton rule, PACs can coordinate with the campaign if they're Hillary's PAC. Libby Watson at the Sunlight Foundation said, super PACs aren't supposed to coordinate with candidates. The whole reasoning behind Citizens United rests on PACs being independent, but Correct the Record claims it can coordinate. It's not totally clear what their reasoning is, but it seems to be that material posted on the internet for free, like blogs, doesn't count as an independent expenditure. So Correct the Record wants to coordinate directly with the Clinton campaign to go in and troll the internet. Because in 2006, the Federal Election Commission created something called the Internet Exemption regarding content posted for free online. As Michael Toner, the chair of the Federal Election Commission at the time, said, the ruling totally exempts individuals who engage in political activity on the internet from the restrictions of the campaign finance laws. The exemption for individual internet activity in the final rules is categorical and unqualified. Mm-hmm. So now, Correct the Record is going to spend $1 million on a program it calls Barrier Breakers. And the purpose of Barrier Breakers will be to counter anti-Clinton, what they call anti-Clinton rhetoric at Reddit, on Facebook, on Instagram, and on Twitter. Correct the Record says it has already addressed, whatever that means, more than 5,000 Twitter users who have personally attacked Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton. They said they learned their lesson from dealing with Bernie bros. As a result of what Sleazemaster Brock is doing, one user on Reddit said his inbox turned to cancer on Tuesday. Been a Reddit member of Reddit for almost 4 years, never experiencing anything like it. In fact, all my years on the internet, I've never experienced anything like it. Ta-da. Nicola Post, baby, Nicola Post. Brother Albert, the sage of Southwest Wisconsin. Well, you don't get to be the sage of Southwest Wisconsin just, you know, saying things. Another guy named Paul Ryan, who is not Paul Eddie Munster Ryan, who is a lawyer for a group called Campaign Legal Center, a nonpartisan outfit, has said, what they're doing with Correct the Record is groundbreaking. It is creating new ways to undermine campaign regulation. So now I understand what I merely suspected before. There is an organized, orchestrated campaign to try to attack and preferably silence people who dare to be critical of Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton. Whatever the Bernie bros, and that was largely a created phenomenon, not a real one, did or did not do, they weren't coordinated. They were just people who were passionate about their desire for America to have a future. And I realize, maybe not so much realize, but while we should probably be focusing on the sad and untimely death of Prince today, I was reminded of another great rock and roller who has gone on, when I saw some comments. There's been a particular individual has been waging with whom I routinely interact, has been particularly vitriolic in talking about the so-called millennials. You know, the generation that is the single largest voting bloc in the United States of America, and which seems very overwhelmingly in favor of Bernie Sanders, and which Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton's people are afraid are just going to stay home instead of going and voting for the woman who voted to let George W. Bush and Dick Cheney and Condoleezza Rice and Don Rumsfeld and the rest of those murderous, homicidal, war criminal freaks go and kill the innocent people of Iraq. She's just insufferable. And I got to thinking about David Bowie. I got to thinking about a particular line from David Bowie, and I like to think, I dare hope that our buddy Greg out in San Diego, the moderator in the Malloy chat room, will be thinking right about now. I know what line. As I watch this individual just crap all over the millennials, you know, in the name of Hillary Clinton, I thought of something David Bowie said. And these children that you spit on as they try to make their world are immune to your consultations. They're quite aware of what they're going through. And see, that's the thing. They are going through something. People who are 25, 28, 30, 32, 34, by the time they are the age of the people who are hollering, "Get off my lawn right now," are, they're going to be dealing with the front end of a planet that is trying to rid itself of the human species once and for all. They're quite aware of what they're going through. And when they hear Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton say, "Well, you know, people who want, in states and communities that want fracking, they can have fracking. But if they don't, they won't." But the problem, well, you know what, come on. You know what the problem is. This is the problem. You know, if people want fracking, people can have fracking. If people don't want fracking, they won't have fracking.
Corporations are people, my friend. Of course they are. Human beings, my friend.
So it doesn't matter what the meat people, the people made of 60-some-odd% water in a sort of gelatinous composition, who have children that they love, that they don't want to see their minds turned into a sort of wasted goo by consuming frack water and having their potable water poisoned and having it literally come in through the semi-permeable membrane of their children's skin. What they want won't matter a damn. What the fracking companies want will. And so I remained kind of amazed at, and I saw another post on my page over the last couple of days about Carole King saying how happy she was to see that Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton won New York. The boomers are apparently thrilled, or some segment of them. I mean, I'm at the tail end of the boomer generation. I'm a 1963 kid. The baby boom is what, 1945 to 1964? So I'm on the far end of the, well, near end, I guess, of the boomer generation. And the millennials know one thing, if they know many things, but they know this. They can wait the boomers out. The boomers have had more than an adequate opportunity to screw up America. They helped give us Reagan. They helped give us both Bushes. They participated in giving us Bill Clinton, the best Republican president we've had since Eisenhower. This election, 2016, is getting pretty close to the last gasp of the far end of the boomers. And this is not to say that they are monolithic any more than the millennials are, but the Hillary Clinton campaign is not driven by people in generations younger than mine. Generations younger than mine recognize that this country has a profound problem that cannot be solved by incrementalism, by saying pretty please to power and having power pat us on our little heads and say, not now, we haven't made enough money yet. We'll stop screwing the planet later. Run along, sonny. So me, I stand with the millennials. I stand with Bernie, a man who understands that it is their world. And I don't know how the convention's going to shake out, but I want him to go all the way there. I want him to press his case that he should be the nominee. For all the myriad reasons we've talked about all along. In terms of suppressing social media, well, apparently Correct the Records project is working. Carol Baker says, worked on me. I'm off social media till after the coronation. Well, I hate that. I love Carol's posts. I get some of my best laughs of the day from what she says. Well, Devin, I disagree. I mean, the demographics on the boomers are 1945 to 1964. Devin says, you're not a boomer if you can't vividly remember life prior to JFK's brains exiting to oblivion. Hey, I was in utero during the Cuban Missile Crisis. It's got to count for something. Yeah. So, back to the mailbag. My reference to American Eagle Airlines, Steve in New York said, I knew a guy who flew regional jets, $25,000 a year, and ate off the flight attendant food cart for dinner. You know, cookies and pop. Steve continues and said, so I told a Hillary supporter on Tuesday I was voting for the only Democrat. She asked me if I thought Bernie was ready to be the leader of the free world, to which I responded that Bernie didn't vote to go to war and kill a million people. Then to my utter amazement, out came the Republican meme of bad intelligence. I never thought I'd hear GOP talking points from a Democratic candidate. I should have asked her if Obama was ready. So you see, Bernie just ain't ready to be leader of the free world. He's just a young neophyte with no wisdom. Oh, wait, never mind. Right. Steve says, you know, for a second there, I thought Hillary might have had a thin skin. And if tweets so offend and piss her off, there's no way she'll survive the Trump Twitter hurricane. Oh, that's true. Well, but wait, Steve, wait. Remember when Trump called her Crooked Hillary? And she immediately declared to the world that she could care less? Nah, Twitter doesn't bother her. Apparently it bothers David Brock. Scumbag. Yeah, right, Marty. Or those of us in California don't get to make our preference known. Yeah, the single most delegate-rich state in the union, and Bernie's got to get out before they vote. See, the fact of the matter is, Bernie's exposing Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton. He's not doing anything to her. He is merely showing America what a terrible candidate she's always been and always will be. That's all. In Shreveport, Jack says, it's all a huge mess. Honk it. I'm so pissed about all the crap that's happening that it's futile to try to write anything intelligent about it. I just want to let loose some cussing like Angry does. And I'm trying to watch my cussing. And I understand, Harry. Harry says, I fear that if we wait out the privileged, entitled segment of the Democratic baby boomers, it will be much too late. Harry, I fear that it was much too late back when those self-same boomers helped elect Reagan, saying things like, I didn't leave the Democratic Party, the Democratic Party left me. Back when they were calling him the great communicator. Back when they were voting for Morning in America. Jack in Shreveport continues and says, it seems that Hillary and the Democratic Party are not just trying to silence negative comments about Hillary, but are also trying to quash discussion of ideas and what party values should be as well. Well, that quashing kind of took place in the late 80s and 90s when the Democratic Party had utterly abandoned its social justice roots, its FDR roots, its commitment to civil rights and minority ethnic justice. Because all of that got thrown under the bus when they created the Democratic Leadership Council. And Bill Clinton became a new Democrat and wagged that God knows where it's been knuckle at us and said, the era of big government is over. And kneecapped poor people. And helped to create the prison industrial complex that would eventually lead to the school to prison pipeline. When he helped take Glass-Steagall out behind the barn and slit its throat from ear to ear so that his Wall Street pals would be free to play with our money and wreck our lives. That. Oh, goodness me. I'm terribly sorry. I've kept someone on hold, and I'm terribly sorry. Hey, welcome to the program.
It's okay, Bob. I don't.
Hey, Tracy.
You were on a roll. I'm just fine listening. So don't trip. I'm still in a I can't believe that Prince passed away funk right now.
I got an alert from on my app from the Guardian going Prince is dead, and I'm going Prince who? Because, see, all this...
I know, that's like, that was my thing. Prince who?
Right. And you know, that's no disrespect to Prince. But in my case, I was toddling around. We had to take Margie to a dental appointment today. And so I'm toddling around, and I'm listening to BBC World Service, and in which they broadcast, today we will be spending a significant part of our broadcast paying homage to Er Nibs the Queen, who turns 90. They shot 60 guns in her honor earlier today. So when I got the note from the Guardian that said Prince is dead, I'm thinking, well, that's freaking ironic.
Right, right.
Because I thought maybe it was that nasty-ass Prince Philip that she's married to who had finally, yeah, you know, uttered some miserable racial epithet for the last time and shuffled off to hell.
Exactly. No, I my brother texted me because he knows that I am beyond a Prince fan. And he's like, I'm sorry to hear about your boy Prince. I'm like, what are you talking about? Because I hadn't heard. I was encased in the new house with saws drilling tile and stuff like that. And then I saw it on, you know, I immediately Googled. And I'm like, I just fell out in a heap of tears. I have a bit, like I said, I'm not a sentimental person. Well, yes, I am to a certain extent. But I haven't been this hurt since Minnie Riperton died in 1979. I wasn't even this hurt with Michael Jackson. I was hurt when Michael Jackson died, but not. It was this Prince. 57? And then, you know, Prince dying, and then we got to hear about, you know, people talking shit about Bernie Sanders and.
Well, but
all that.
I don't know when you tuned in, but have you been here for the whole program?
Pretty much. I was listening, you know, besides.
Well, you do know that Stacey Dash de-blacked Prince.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Wait, what? No, okay, lay it on me, Bob. What did that bitch say? See, there's another word I want to say for her.
But you're not going to use it because Australians can use it and get away with it, but Americans can't. Not even American black lesbian women. No.
I would never say it on the air, but you know what I want to say.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. She de-blacked Prince.
Yeah.
How does one de-black Prince?
Well, you didn't look at him as a black artist.
Really, bitch?
How's that pineapple cake working out for you now, Tracy, huh?
Exactly. I'm going to drive all the way to Seal Beach to go get a piece of cake now. Ooh, and if they didn't stay open, if the traffic wasn't so terrible, Bob, you did not look. He loved his blackness. You know, he was a high. I mean, as a man, I wrote a paper a couple of years ago. I took a class in queer gender identity or something like that. And I wrote a paper, and the starting of it was controversy. Am I black or white? Am I straight or gay? Do I believe in God? Do I believe in me? And I took that and wrote about my life as a, you know, newly formed lesbian. But, and Prince has been battling whether he was, but we all know Prince was a brother. He did the Prince thing when he wrote that song. It was the ultimate fuck you. Because most of Prince's music, when you listen to it, was like, fuck y'all, I'm going to be me. But Stacey fucking Dash, she takes me to
let's work through this, Tracy. I mean, let's pretend, you know, this is therapy and we're all sitting in group and and I'm in the circle, and you're in the circle, and the whole Horn family community congregation's in the circle, and let's work through this. Let's unpack this. How do you not? And I mean, so is this a because let's remember, over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, Tracy, the only thing that they know that Dr. King ever said is that he looked for a day when a man was judged by the content of his character and not the color of his skin.
Right.
Okay, so that means we just get to ignore racism now. That's the way they right. that's the way they interpret it. But how do you how is
you can't even form the word.
I mean, little white boy that I was, when Prince hit the scene, man, he was black and he was awesome. But then again, I came from a little corner of Alabama that had this sort of multicultural, multi-ethnic vibe going for it, where was that in Alabama?
Wait, where?
The Shoals. Yeah,
what?
The Shoals. The Shoals. Who was it? I think it was Paul Simon that wanted to come and record in Muscle Shoals, and he said to Rick Hall, "But I want that black rhythm section you got." And he said, "I'll get them for you, but they awful pale." that's the world I grew up in, and that's why, you know, it was surprising but not when the good old boys in their cowboy boots were blaring Prince out of their pickup truck windows long before subwoofers were ever installed in automobiles.
Okay. I mean, any person that has the balls to go to open for the Rolling Stones in a bikini and a trench coat. I know he was booed off the stage, but so the fuck was.
Really?
Oh, you never heard this? Oh, yes. 1981, the Los Angeles Memorial Coliseum. Yes, he was. He sang for a while before he couldn't get, I don't know how many, this was before Little Red Corvette was released. Actually, if you go on my Facebook page, I posted it. I put it on the Horn page. It's like there's an article about it, and the irony in that it was a throwback Thursday article a couple of years ago, and it was talking about how Prince opened for the Rolling Stones, in '81, and he barely made it through his set. I don't know how long he stayed on stage. Oh, and they were throwing beer bottles and stuff at him as well. And so I wrote, what kind of world do we live in? How is it that Keith Richards outlived Prince?
Not that we're sad about it.
No, and I wrote that. Now I'm not wishing the man ill will.
Okay, so I don't like engaging in rank speculation.
That Keith Richards is a zombie?
No, but Robert in Morgantown sent something to me that he saw on Facebook earlier.
Uh-huh.
And he says, it's going around Facebook, people speculating that Prince died of HIV.
Oh, Jesus.
And Robert...
Because of his flu-like symptoms that might have turned into pneumonia.
Well, no, what Robert is reading is that people are saying that he's had it for years, and he was doing okay, you know, with the modern medications. Until some crazy religious people told him God had cured him, and he stopped taking his meds. And what Robert said is, what a damn shame if that rumor's true.
Well, you know he became a Jehovah's Witness.
Yeah. Yes.
So, and you know, and see, don't trip because my mind was working the same way. Not about the HIV thing, but when I heard he had gotten sick. But reports said he was doing better, and then he dies at 57. And Jehovah's Witnesses, I know not much about them, but they're not so much about the hospital.
If you're a Jehovah's Witness and you want to be among the 144,000 souls who actually get to go to heaven, and you know that's a real problem for Jehovah's Witnesses because there's already a whole lot more than 144,000 dead Jehovah's Witnesses. You know, they're all booked up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's I know this from personal experience. They will let a little baby with a curable illness die rather than it have than that baby have a blood transfusion. And the courts of this country have said, yep, can't trample on their religious rights. That baby's got to go.
Yeah, but you can trample on a Muslim's religious. Okay, well, I'm sorry.
But you see, so if they'll let a baby die, then an adult can let himself die.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know.
And trust me, my mind was going there. When I heard about the death, and knowing that he had converted to Jehovah's Witness, I was terrified. Because like you said, if he died for something that was curable, or, you know, he didn't get a flu shot, or whatever the case may be.
Well, O-M-G. And there's people out there who are definitely not helping, because Aretha has already said, I wonder if he died of the Zika.
No, Aretha, gosh. Some people, first of all, the way Aretha Franklin dresses, she can't talk to nobody about anything.
Now, you just draw the claws back in, okay? Saucer of milk for cab driver Tracy, please.
Yeah. Just like, first of all, bitch, really? You know? The thing that,
yeah,
first
yeah,
of all,
yeah, yeah. Shoes on the other foot now, isn't it, huh?
The things that people, I don't even, has Prince even been anywhere where that virus is? Has he been to South America?
Well, no, because see, those two mosquitoes that carry the Zika virus are not known for being able to survive in Minnesota. Now, granted, in high summer in Minnesota, they got mosquitoes the size of Airbus A380s, but they are not Zika mosquitoes.
Right.
They're just the kind of mosquitoes that beautiful, delicious fish jump up out of lakes and dine on. And that's what makes them so delicious. And it, circle of life, you know, Simba up there on the rock, right?
I mean, Simba on the rock. Speaking
when the walls fell, Shaka.
Well, check this out. So, speaking of Simba, this is so, talk about going on a tangent. So, me being me, I'm on my way home from dropping off when I'm a fair. And I'm in a very, very white part of town, very white. And I'm driving by, and I see it's a little elementary school with their, you know, the upcoming pageant. Why are they doing the Lion King? Now, maybe, granted, there's maybe the Lion King, Bob.
At this point in time, I need to just make a quick cultural reference. We have transitioned now. We are into warm weather, so I have gone from brown liquor, and it's not hot enough for tequila yet. So right now we're in what I call gin weather. So
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you know, just so people know, once we've sorted out why they're doing the Lion King, I mean, it's gin weather. Okay.
Okay. Bob, I mean, how many Broadway musicals are out about white people?
All of them.
All of them. Okay, so we get what we. So me and my girlfriend were talking about the ones. I said, okay, so we have how many black musicals? We have Ragtime. We have The Color Purple. We have The Lion King, except for the character. The actor that plays Scar is white. But everybody else pretty much.
Yeah, everybody knows Scar is white. I mean, if for no other reason than because of
because he's Scar.
Well, I think it was it Jeremy Irons or
Jeremy Irons. Jeremy Irons.
A monkey's uncle. Oh, goody!
Yeah.
You know, and in fact, ever since that Disney movie came out, oh, goody, has it entered our vocabulary in this family and stayed. I've got grown children now who will now look at me when I say something they don't like and say, oh, goody.
Oh, goody. Exactly. So, but everybody in that play, in that musical, is, you know, a POC, a person of color. And so when I drove by, I tried to call my girl, and she's like, we're going. see if we go back through and find out when this bitch is, because we're buying tickets.
Kind of gotta.
And we're going. Because I'm like...
Oh, by the way, I got to share something with you. How, okay, you want some spooky-ass trivia?
Okay, shoot it.
Brother Deacon Asa just mentioned, he said, by the way, Michael Jackson died 7 years ago in June. This year, he too would have been 57.
Yep. That was the big thing. Prince, Madonna, and Michael Jackson are the same age. How is Madonna still alive? I did that. I'm sorry. That was not nice.
Well, I mean, there's a whole lot of people you can point to. I mean, look, every time some decent human being, I mean, this is just my standard, Tracy. Every time some decent human being, known or unknown, dies on this planet, I think to myself, and yet Dick Cheney, with that decent human being's heart beating in his chest, still lives.
Exactly. I mean, and we're by no means Korn family. Am I wishing ill will on people? I'm not wishing people dead. Well, no, I'm not wishing other people dead. But when somebody, again, on top of everything else, so me being me, because I have to be, I have a freaking board meeting this evening, and I have the one-on-one with our new interim pastor. And my church is basically East Hollywood. So I said, well, you know what? Since I'm going to probably be in Hollywood tonight, I'm going to go by Prince's Star, which is something I would never do. It never even come. Like I said, how many people have died in my lifetime? And I live in Los Angeles. Never would I have even thought about going by their star and putting flowers or whatever, paying condolences. But no, I can't go by Prince and put anything on Prince's Star because he has none. He does not have a star. On the Hollywood Walk of Fame, Bob. But Will Ferrell has a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. John Tesh.
Wait, Prince doesn't have a star?
Nope. No.
Not and even, I mean, you know, purple, as rock and roll movies go, Purple Rain was pretty damn good.
Look, Purple Rain, let me tell you.
Wait a minute. Does Madonna have a star?
I'm pretty sure she does. As a matter of fact, I'm pretty sure she does.
Wait, and the only thing she's ever done was Desperately Seeking Susan?
Well, see, and here's the thing about, you know, the Hollywood Walk of Fame, the stars are for broadcast, music. It's not just for movies. So they do have, you have a star for, you know, for records, for movies. For television and for back in the day radio.
Well, diddly.
Mm-hmm. But so in their defense, and knowing Prince the way, you know, Prince did not care about bullshit. So his people basically would have to send a letter or what have you saying that he wanted a star. But like really Prince needs a star. But I'm still devastated that Prince doesn't have a star. John fucking Tesh?
Yeah. No. Let me guess. David Hasselhoff has a star.
I'm pretty sure he does. They actually have, you know, Korn family, because my phone is tripping. The Hollywood Walk of Fame actually has a website. And you can search to see who does not or who has a star.
And where it is.
And where it is. And so, yeah, because I'm like, my church is basically at the beginning of where, well, toward the end of the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Will fucking Ferrell has a star, Bob.
Now, Will Ferrell's funny, at least to white people.
And I was going to say, you have to qualify that, homie, because I was just having this conversation about Will Ferrell, I kid you not, a couple of days ago, and I don't get it. I have tried.
It's an uncomfortable kind of comedy. It's a squirmy. It's a squirmy kind of comedy. But I suspect they gave him his for his George Bush impression because it was so perfect. By the way, just so we can add to the speculation, Carol Baker points out. I heard it was chemtrails. That's what Alex Jones says killed Prince. Chemtrails.
What are chemtrails?
Don't. I'm so glad you asked that question. I am so absolutely glad you asked that question. But let me transition real quick if we can. Did you watch the finale of Outsiders?
Dude, let me tell you something. I didn't watch it until yesterday because I hadn't realized, because I've been so crazy busy, I hadn't realized I hadn't watched the week before. So I had a twofer.
Oh, nice. A little mini binge.
I had a little mini binge yesterday as I was packing. And I was sitting there at the end of the season finale going, wait, what? And then the motherfuckers say, they're not coming back until January. Really, bitches?
Well, they can't, did you hear the conversation I had with the creator of the show, Peter Mattei?
Yes, I heard the last maybe 15 minutes of it, so I'm going to go back.
Well, he kind of explained, you know, there's just no way to do all that outdoor shooting in the dead of winter in Appalachia.
Well, fuck, damn it.
And it would make for some pretty bleak shooting anyway. So that they've got it. That's how the schedule works out. They do all their shooting during the summer months, and then the program will be ready come January.
I'm sitting there with my mouth agape. I'm like, wait, what? So I mean, I don't know. I don't want to do spoilers, but holy shit, who are people dead?
See, it's
have a resurrection.
Right, Yeah. Who's the little girl?
Right. Who? And she's been kind of, intertwined throughout. You know, she pops up every so often, kind of like they're, you know, who is she?
I don't know if Big Foster was tripping his nuts off anymore.
Right. Now that shit was hilarious. Because I'm glad that they, because I was pissed as hell when they killed Ma. And then I'm like, but to me being the person that I am and how far I think, I'm like, she can't, because she was so good, how could they just kill her off? But they haven't, because she's coming back and fucking with them in a real bad sense.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there was some.
You're talking about a mind fuck. Man, you got a mind fuck with no grief, no spit. It's just, oh. And then we find out that what's her name wasn't really trying, you know, and she was just trying to, oh, yeah.
Sure you were.
Yeah, sure. And I'm sitting there watching it, and Dan's like, because she had just come and lay down last night when I was watching the end of it, and I screamed, what the fuck? And she said, "What are you talking about?"
Did Jan come a running?
No, she was laying out, and I scared her. Scared her out of one of her games on her phone. And I was undone. I was just undone. I haven't been that undone in a while. And like I said, so January. So when I saw Jan, I was okay. And then I saw January, and I'm like, I wish I had heard him talk about why January, then I wouldn't have been so upset. When it says season 2 coming in January.
Oh, can I tell you a little secret?
What?
I'm going to get to go up and visit the shoot.
You lucky bastard. When are they going to, are they shooting now?
No, they're in pre-production right now, and they'll start shooting next month.
Nice. Well, I did not expect to get so sucked into that show. I did not. Speaking of shows, and I know you don't have cable, but the other day when I was listening to you guys, you were talking about, for whatever the reason, I couldn't get a hold of you guys. So I was playing on my phone, and I remembered another show that people are kind of, it's hilarious. George Lopez has a show on TV Land, and I only saw one episode so far. It's hilarious. So basically, it's him, and he's like, I'm too rich to live in where I grew up, and I'm too brown to live where I live. And so, I mean, he walks up to his daughter's school, and he's standing around, and somebody tries to give him the keys to their car because they think he's a valet. Oh, stuff
nice.
Like that. Oh, God. You know, if you, I'm pretty sure you could probably find it on demand, but if you can, I mean, just George talking about, like, you know, the demographics of how he scores well with, you know, blacks and Latinos, and he's like, he's just like, well, so not so much for the white people, and she's like, oh, I wasn't trying to say that, but okay, yeah. You know, it's just, and his white neighbor's getting pissy because of the, he told one of them, he's like, leave me alone, you're lucky that I moved in, because if I had to move in and brought the property values down to this neighborhood, you wouldn't have been able to afford this house. I love George Lopez. He is, you know, they talk about, you know, people are still mad at him because his wife gave him her kidney and then he divorced her. They talk, I mean, it's just really funny. It really, really is. And it's the perfect kind of show because it's snarky and funny, but real. Because it's just one of those things where, you know, this shows that as much as you want to, once you reach a certain level of success or money or what have you, you cannot go back home. And you have to wrestle with, it's like me moving to Encino. As much as I love where I grew up and my neighborhood and the people in that neighborhood, I can't live there anymore. And that hurts me. Because, you know, why? I mean, it's not like I make that much money or anything like that, but there's this certain things that I have become accustomed to living in the valley. Like walking into the bank and not standing in line and having more than one teller open. Or the grocery store and having more than one checkout lane open. You know what I'm saying? Is when I go visit my family down in, you know, South Central and I have to do these things, or the line wrapped around the corner for the ATM if it's working. And what are you going to do? You can't do anything about it. So you become accustomed to these things, and then you go home and you know, it just makes you crazy. So, I mean, I don't think I would ever have George Lopez money issues, but you know what I'm saying? It's just, you know, it would be like if you ever moved out to California and became accustomed to it out here. As much as you love your home and, you know,
I think I'd accustom real quick. I mean, in Southern California, there's some hills there you can look at, and nobody's blowing them up.
Yeah.
And nobody's blowing them up.
Yes.
They occasionally slide down the mountain because silly people build houses on them, but, well.
Yes. Yes. Silly, stupid people build, you know, and it never ceases to amaze me when I am driving through those hills and I see these houses on stilts, and I'm like,
well, it's like that parable that Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi, gave about the man who built his house upon the mud.
On those roads, exactly. Speaking of houses on stilts, do you have Amazon? You have Amazon Prime, yes?
I do.
Have you watched Bosch?
No.
Okay, add that to your list. You like gritty crime drama, like Elmore Leonard,
yeah,
kind of stuff,
yeah,
right?
I did, and I love noir stuff. I mean, yeah.
Oh, did you? Oh, because season two just came out a couple of months back, so you got two seasons to watch.
Oh, okay. You know what I'm waiting for, Tracy?
What?
Netflix commissioned a full series, never even asked for a pilot. They commissioned a full series of my favorite 21st century science fiction novel, Altered Carbon.
Okay, see.
And
I don't know what that is, because I don't do sci-fi. But
well, but see, this is like a Raymond Chandler novel set in the 25th century.
Okay, you got me.
It owes a lot to like Blade Runner.
Okay.
I'm stoked about this. And one of the neat things through the series is that it's predicated on people. Everybody's personality and memory and everything is recorded onto a cortical stack that's installed right after birth, at the base of your skull. And
you don't
so,
forget anything?
And it's called digitized human personality. And so they get transferred from body to body as needed. So you've got this guy who's, you got this guy from another planet who's a hard ass, who is half Slavic and half Japanese.
Oh shit!
And he gets digital human freighted into an Anglo body in the Bay Area to sort out the murder of this rich guy who's 300 years old. It's cool. Please believe me, it's just cool. I will check out Bosch, though. I will. I absolutely will.
Now, and another one of my favorites that are coming back soon. Did you ever watch Grace and Frankie or Frankie and Grace?
Yeah.
Get really Tom.
Yeah. Oh, hey, I got Tim from L.A. has just wanted to let you, just in case you were up for one, just one more little indignity this evening.
Yes.
Tim sent me an email. Guess who else has a star?
Oh, God. Laying on me.
Donald Trump has a star.
That's right. That's right. And
but, there's an upside. It's had a swastika painted on it. And people,
oh, yeah.
And
it's people been, have, it has been and, vandalized.
And, people,
left
have,
and right.
People have taken to pissing on it.
Pissing on it, putting dog shit on it. It's pretty much almost as a nonstop vigil at his star to keep it clean. So, there's, you know, they, like you said, there is an upside to certain things, but yeah. So, well, now that I've, you know, kind of brightened up the mood and, you know, we're not upset about black men, you know, reverends trying to get on planes because he bought 2 plane tickets and how dare he with his uppity nigga ass.
Mm-hmm. Got one more of those,
you
by
know,
the way. Got one more of those, by the way.
There's only so much assistance. I mean, typically I would hang out with you, but I have to go deal with my pastor because, yes, there's been some more rumblings at my church, and I have to try. I told a friend of mine to say, okay, I have to get all my anger out today because, you know, Prince died and all this, and I'm trying not to channel Robin Harris, and I'm going to leave on this note. I'm from a small town called Fresh Off a White Boy's Ass, and you're making me homesick.
Tracy, have a good evening, dear.
My good evening, my dear. And good. I don't know what the fundraising is looking like, but put me in for a $50 challenge.
All right. Okay. Let me update that real quick because this is important.
Okay.
I want to thank Randy and Desiree. The challenge got met that was on the table. And so in order to keep this going, Tracy, you have just put $50 on the table that will hopefully be met by 50, you know, 10 at 5, 5 at 10, et cetera, in short order. And maybe we'll keep that rolling and we can actually get 2 weeks of fundraising in 1 week.
Nice!
We've got, at this point in time, we've got about $550, $600 to go.
Okay. It could be done. Get her done. Get her done. So
thank
anyway,
you. Thank you, Tracy.
Family.
Thank you so kindly.
Thank you for doing what you do.
Well, sometimes I don't feel like I do much, but you guys certainly make a wonderful little community for us to interact in here. You really do. And I need my little cultural fixes from Southern California. Although I got to tell you, I'm kind of pissed that Alexander Hamilton is still on the damn $10 bill or going
to
be.
Yeah, I'm annoyed
even,
about that.
You know, and the thing is, he got saved, so to speak.
By a Puerto Rican.
Well, I mean, he was from St. Kitts and Nevis or something, so, you know.
Whatever.
Yeah, right. But, no, if it had been up to, I've been thinking about this because I tweeted this out. It seemed to me like it would have been justice if Alexander Hamilton would have been replaced by Sitting Bull. But I don't know.
Yeah.
But that was kind of a white privilege moment for me, so I got to rethink it. I don't know if indigenous people in this country, American Indians, I don't know if they even want to be on the money.
I don't think they do.
But the reason I got to thinking about it is down in Mexico, a man from Western Hemisphere pre-Columbian history, whom I greatly admire, a man named Nezahualcoyotl, is on the Mexican money. They've had Indians on the money for a long time.
Well, because they realize their culture and their heritage and where they started from.
And I think Harriet Tubman is a perfect choice. I think we should probably have room on more than one damn piece of money for a woman.
Oh yeah.
Because I've got a list, Tracy. Granted, Helen Keller, America's most brilliant early 20th century Southern socialist, made it to the back of the Alabama Quarter. Them Alabamians didn't know who they was putting on the back. They just thought that she's that sweet little blind girl at water. Water! And yeah. But I want to see Mother Jones on some money. Yeah. Boy, I tell you, that'd piss the Republicans right off, Mother Jones.
I'm surprised that a black woman got on there.
Oh, but see, there's plenty of room for more. I think Rosa Parks on some money would be nice.
Well, they have a whole list. They have like Marion. They're going to be going back and forth. Marion Anderson, and a whole bunch of people.
Yeah. But you got to go. But I did want to let you know that it is driving the wing nuts right plumb crazy that Harriet Tubman that Harriet Tubman is replacing Andrew Jackson.
I love it.
All right, Tracy, you have a good night, dear.
You too. Good
night. Bye now. The irrepressible one and only Tracy, the lady cab driver. And again, thank you. Thank you very kindly to Desiree and Randy for meeting the challenge this evening, courtesy of Chris and Peggy. That's huge with a capital U. And now there's $50 more in the way of a challenge on the table, and hopefully that'll get met. And we'll get closer and closer to finishing the week where we need to be. Yay. Hey, it's Scott and maybe Punky down in Southern California. Hey, Scott.
Yeah, hey, Mike. Or Bob, I'm sorry.
That's okay. That's high praise.
Well, listen, I...
Hey, Punky.
I'm not going to talk about Prince, okay? But I will say this. I'm mixing up. I went back to my grade school art class to figure out mixing colors. So I've got the food coloring, and I'm going to whip up a batch of purple and dip Punky in it in honor of Prince. So
have we talked to Punky about this?
No. I figure for all the trouble he gives me when I'm trying to talk on the radio.
I'd go with the airbrush if I were you. No, I mean, there's this story, and it used to make my father laugh uproariously. This guy goes to a pet shop, and he lives alone, and he wants something just to kind of keep him company, and he wants a little singing canary.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy sells him the canary, and he comes back in a couple of days and says, "This canary ain't singing a lick." And he looks at the, oh, okay, his beak's overgrown. What you have to do is take a file and just file his beak down a little bit. And a couple of days later, he sees the guy on the street, and he goes, "Hey, did that work?" He goes, "No, the canary still ain't singing. The canary's dead." He said, "What?" He said, "Yeah, he was dead when I took his head out of the vise."
So this guy with the...
I'm going to hell, you know that? I am.
So this guy with a parrot, a talking parrot, has a party, and his elderly aunt has come to the party. Well, over the years, people in similar situations have taught the bird how to curse like a sailor, even worse than a sailor. So the man knows this, but he knows that he's also got to be, you know, cognizant of his elderly aunt's sensibilities. So he warns the parrot, "Now, don't you say a dirty word around Aunt Cecilia, because otherwise I'll punish you severely." So everything's going along fine, but then Aunt Cecilia totters on up to where the bird is, and the bird just lets loose with a stream that turns the air blue for a yard in every direction. So after the party's over, the guy puts the bird in the freezer, And the bird sees a frozen turkey, and he says, "Good God, what did you do?" Anyway, so, all right, but
no, you started this. You started this.
No, you started it. I was
so this. Gonna... So this guy walks into a bar, and he's got a little briefcase, and he takes it out, and he's got a and he's got a little cage with a little mouse in it, and a little cage with a little canary in it, and the mouse is all dressed up in tux and tails. And he takes out a little tiny piano and a little tiny music stand. And he looks at the bartender and says, my mouse can play the piano. I'll bet you for a beer my mouse can play the piano. And the bartender, you know, anything to liven up a slow evening. All right, sure, a beer. So the mouse walks over to the piano, sits down, flips the tails of the tux out from behind him, sits down at the bench, and begins playing Chopin. And the bartender said, see, Punky likes it. And the bartender says, well, son of a gun, and gives him the beer. The guy drinks the beer and says, I got one more for you. The canary can sing opera. So he sets the canary down. The canary begins, the piano playing mouse begins to play, and the canary begins singing an aria from Wagner. And another guy walks over and goes, man, that's awesome. I don't suppose you'd sell that, those, would you? And he said, sure. $100. And the guy pays him, and he packs him up, and he hands him to him. The guy goes away. The bartender goes, are you kidding? You could have made a fortune off of that. And the guy looks at him and goes, nah, it's a total fraud. The mouse is a ventriloquist. He's doing it all.
That makes me sorry they canceled the Gong Show. Well, all right.
So I could get gonged, right?
Yeah. To get serious for a moment, and I heard this earlier today, or saw this on the TV just briefly, and I'll describe what I saw and heard, and then I want to run my thoughts about it past you to see what you've got to say, because I honor your sensibilities in these sort of things. Earlier today, Hillary was on TV talking to some group somewhere about gun violence.
Oh, yeah, she's beating that like a little tin drum up in Connecticut. She's so completely made a meat suit out of the children of Sandy Hook Elementary that it's absolutely shameful.
Yeah,
I mean, she's raised waving the bloody shirt to a high disgrace.
Well, it would be fair to say, I think, that she has politicized and utilized it for personal gain in a different way, but to the same extent or more than the NRA has, and that's going something.
I think you've hit it right on the head, Scott. And in point of fact, in 2012, when Hillary was Secretary of State, still, okay,
yeah.
Remington Arms, who manufactured the rifle that that young Adam Lanza took from Mother Lanza before blowing her brains all over her pillow as she slept, and then went and slaughtered the children at Sandy Hook, Remington Arms wanted to sell a boatload of guns overseas.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can't just do that, Scott. I mean, we've got a free market economy and everything, but you can't just do that.
Well, other countries have good sense, okay?
Well, no, we've got laws. So Remington Arms had to apply. You remember how the Secretary of State had the final say so on the Keystone XL pipeline?
Oh yeah.
Okay, until President Obama just said, "Screw it." Well, they get the final say-so on these arms transfers. I know that seems a little bit counterintuitive, because you would think the Department of Defense would maybe get the final say-so on sending guns to people who want to make war on other people. But no, it's the Secretary of State's office. And so the very same company that Hillary is out there excoriating, and some of whose lobbyists have given money to her campaign... Well, in 2012, she signed off on a $100 million deal to send Remington assault rifles abroad where they could be used to perhaps chew other little children into teeny tiny unidentifiable pieces. But see, we've got it. We've got a for-profit media who are completely in the tank for her. You know, that you would think that would be like front page news in the New York Times. You know, because for starters, Scott, it's true.
Yeah.
But they're suppressing that because now she's not so fond of guns. Back in 2008 when she was running, oh, she was cozying right up talking about how back when she was just a little girl before she was even a Goldwater girl, about how her daddy would take her out and teach her how to shoot the family freedom protector. And a single tear emerged from the corner of her cheek as she reminisced about those fond days of freedom.
Oh, yes. Well, it's not commonly known, but back in late 2002 or 2003, early 2003, when Colin Powell went to the UN and held up that teeny tiny little vial to represent, I don't know, yellow cake or marble cake or upside down.
This is
down.
Not speculation, my right, colleagues. Okay. These are facts.
The vial contained Hillary's tears. She let him borrow it so that he could use it as a prop. So, but now she's got it back and she whips it out whenever she needs to drum up a little sympathy or empathy or whatever the hell it is. But the thing that she said today to this group up in Connecticut is the thing that I'm curious if my take on it is correct. She didn't mention Bernie by name, but she went into this whole big routine about, well, you know, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that, and guns are the worst thing that ever was, and it's not enough, you know, to focus on Wall Street. It's not enough to focus on bankers. You know, we've got to focus on guns to protect our precious children, blah, 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 blah. And I'm sitting there looking at it, and I said, no, wait a minute. I'll bet you it could be statistically shown that more individuals, families, even little children even, have been impacted by the fact that she and a lot of other politicians on both sides of the aisle are bought and paid for by the bankers and the lobbyists and Wall Street and the special interests than have ever been affected by gun violence. This isn't to take away from victims of gun violence or the horrendous slaughter that has gone on in this country longer than I've been alive. But it's simply to point out, how is it possible that people are so irretrievably stupid that they will buy into the notion that as bad as gun violence is, more people have been damaged, injured, have died even because of the activities not only of Wall Street and bankers and lobbyists and all of that, but the fact that our politicians are in the pockets of these bastards.
Absolutely. No, you. That's perfect. And by the way, this is kind of interesting. Polling data from Connecticut suggests that while people there are still horrified by what happened at Sandy Hook, it's actually not way up on the list of priorities. And there's a reason for that, Scott. People nearest that emergent mouth of hell from that day recognize that the government of this country isn't going to do a damned thing about it.
No, and what was it, like 80% of people who were asked about it thought that the government should do something, needs to do something, is way overdue in doing something.
Yeah, no. The popular will is there. But as that Princeton study showed a couple or three or four weeks back, the popular will in this country is absolutely meaningless.
Of course. Because it doesn't fit.
Because it gets shouted down by the corporate persons with all that. Well, you remember, you know, the part and parcel of the Citizens United decision is the statement that money is the equivalent of speech. And when that much money is entering into a system, it shouts down all the people who are just made of flesh and blood. The immortals win. You know, I mentioned Richard K. Morgan's Altered Carbon a couple of minutes ago, and one of the central themes in it are these people who are referred to as Methuselahs because they live to great age because they're filthy rich and they can just keep clones of themselves on store and just periodically rotate in and out of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, when I read it, and it really is a brilliant book, Scott, if you're a science fiction guy, but what I get out of that is that to a certain extent that's a metaphor, because there are other for instance there are entire hotels that are nothing but artificial intelligence, and you know they don't die, and there's sometimes in order to talk about problems in the present we have to put them in the future or a fantasy. I mean, you know, go back to Jonathan Swift with Gulliver's Travels.
Or Star Trek, good God!
Yeah, or Star Trek, sure. And so, you know, that is we have, and of course in Altered Carbon, the Methuselahs control everything because they're immortal, for all intents and purposes.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we have that going on now, and they're called corporations, and if they're persons, it goes without saying that they are immortal persons. And that's a problem. You know, Remington Arms is an immortal person. Sturm Ruger is an immortal person. ExxonMobil is an immortal person. You know, gods walk among us, Scott.
But, and I get that, Bob, but the thing that I just can't quite get my head around, all of these things that we're saying are true, okay? How do people so easily miss the reality of the situation? And getting back to what Hillary said earlier today that I was calling about, how is it that they don't just think for a moment that gun violence and every other evil that you would care to name can be attributed in some form or fashion to the fact that our politicians, our media, everything else that touches us on a daily basis is bought and paid for by controlled by these Methuselahs? How do we miss that other than people are just don't think they don't.
Well, you can't miss what you're not looking at. Okay, Scott.
Well, there is that.
I mean, that's the curse of the little bubble that we are. The Horn Family Community Congregation is a bubble. We're a bubble of people who are actually concerned about what's going on in our country, the future of our country, the future of the planet, the future of the species. But there's a whole lot of people out there who are not, and some of that is by design. There's millions of people in this country who never had civics, who don't have the first freaking clue how this government works, and they get their cues for how the government works from people who are deliberately lying to them.
Well,
so it's not that they don't see, you know, within the frame of what you're talking about. It's not that they don't see. It's that they ain't looking. And a lot of them don't want to see, Scott.
They're not only not looking, but they're ever increasingly not going to be in a place where they're able to look when you have school boards and textbook conferences in places like Texas and other states who pass off just utter nonsense in the formative schooling from kids on up. I've got a niece and a nephew and I mean a niece, her husband, and their kids who live down in, God help us, the Houston area. And they only went there because there was a job opportunity. And it's like a short-term thing. I mean, yeah, you've got a fairly nice job, but look where you're bringing up your kids, which is not, I lived in Texas for about a year and a half in the 90s down in Corpus, which is not exactly Texas in my estimation when you compare it to places like Dallas, et cetera. But it is, after all, Texas. It's in the water. It's in the air. It's in the mindset. But I look at them and I say, good Lord, I hope that the parents are paying close attention and literally are looking, because that's a form of abuse. I mean, to let your children be exposed to that horse shit. I mean, it breaks my heart.
Well, it's heartbreaking. In answer to your question, Gerald just messaged me and said, in answer to Scott's question, how did we miss that? Well, a lot of us didn't miss it. The rest of us won't get it until we turn off the cable and disable the iPhones. When people can name all of the Kardashians but not their elected officials, there's your problem.
Yeah, well, there is that.
And that sort of dovetails back into something that I was referring to earlier. All these hilarians hollering, you know, Bernie must leave the race for the good of the party. Oh, my God, America's going to die. They don't realize that there's a lot of down-ballot Democrats who need something to draw people out to the polls. 2000, just by example, 2014, with nothing really sexy going on in West Virginia, my county had a primary turnout around 30%.
Mm.
The general election turnout was something similar. And out of that, this state got its first Republican legislature in 83 years.
And
the only thing that they had to go and vote on was Obama's EPA's war on coal. And they promptly elected a legislature who went in and screwed them. Destroyed prevailing wage, that was one of the things that helped provide good livings to people, for instance, in the construction industry, who have some of the better wages in this state. And this year, they moved in and absolutely eliminated prevailing wage, and then imposed right to work.
Yeah. Well, and another aspect of that argument, Bernie dropout, is what they're literally saying is, Scott, in California, your vote doesn't matter. As a matter of fact, you don't get to vote.
No, what the hilarians are scared of is that your vote does matter, and if Bernie can deliver a 10 or 15 point win in California, then he goes into the convention with something to say. And the one thing that Hillary Clinton can't stand, cannot abide, will not tolerate, is the idea that somebody could exercise power on her. Well, you know, somebody besides somebody who wrote a $1 million check to her.
Well, I've got news for Hillary and her supporters. You've not heard from California and about 8 or 10 or 12 other states. It ain't over until, what, June 14th? I think the last primary is in D.C.
Well, little old pissant West Virginia still gets to vote.
I thought you guys had voted already.
Oh, hell no. No, I haven't had my chance to express my and you know what? I have never been anything but a registered Democrat from the time I was 18 years old.
You and me both.
That's 35 years for me. And I've never voted for a Republican. Not one. And so I'm disinclined to listen to any of these little hilarian pissants hollering about, you know, Bernie's not a real Democrat. You know, by God, I learned politics at my parents' and grandparents' knees. And I know what a Democrat is. And frankly, Bernie is a hell of a lot better Democrat than she will ever be.
Well, yeah. I mean, one of the things I enjoy so much about Tom Hartman, who is on in the daytime, is he's all the time making the comparison and pointing out the history of Franklin Roosevelt. Now, there was a Democrat. Hillary doesn't, she couldn't hold the handle on his wheelchair.
And the fact of the matter is, in a state like West Virginia that has one of the oldest populations in the country, making that FDR argument might actually matter.
Well, yeah, because old-timers in West Virginia and people who have more than three brain cells to rub together actually know a little something. And part of what they know is how Roosevelt came along at a time when America needed somebody, the world needed somebody, to stand up. And isn't it ironic that a guy who couldn't walk stood up for the little guy?
Well, absolutely. And the fact of the matter is, when he initiated his programs to try to literally save people's lives, Scott, the wealth classes, the kind of people whose grandchildren are giving money to Hillary Clinton, mm-hmm. called him a traitor to his class.
And he said, "I welcome your hatred." That's what Roosevelt said. He said, "They hate me, but I welcome their hatred." Because that's the only way, the bottom line analysis is, the only way that you can fight bullshit is with 14-karat gold truth to the best of your ability.
Yeah, delivered exactly an inch and a half from their faces.
Right. Straight, no chaser. And make that a double, since we're a little short on our consumption of truth. So, well, anyway, it's good to know that the great minds think alike, and also that my bullshit detector went off earlier when Hillary was spreading that the poor suffering.
No,
gun.
I'm surprised the damn thing doesn't go off like a klaxon.
Well, maybe that's why Punky makes so much noise. He keeps hearing my detector go off, and it upsets him.
It could be
somehow
that Punky is your detector.
Well, that could be. That could be. He's all I know is if you look at a bird like a lower form of life, let me see you fly circle or figure eights and then sit down and have a conversation with that bird in the mirror. Okay?
Yeah, exactly.
Now, I can't do it.
Well, I got one more for you before you go.
Okay.
This is courtesy of Graham in Australia. There's two statues in a park. One is of a naked man, the other's a naked woman. And for years upon years, they have stared across at one another. Every decade, every 10 years, the statue, the god appears to the statue and releases them from their statuehood for 1 hour. So the god comes along, turns them into real human beings. The statues jump off their plinths. I love the word plinths. And they run off into the bushes. Ooh. 20 minutes later, you hear him talking, and she says, "Wow, that was great." And then you hear the guy say, "You want to go again? We have 40 minutes. And she says, "Sure, but this time you hold down the pigeon and I'll shit on it."
Oh.
I know, I know.
Where is Chuck Barris when we need him most?
I know. But I had to share that. God, I love that. Oh, I love cheap humor. Scott, have yourself a wonderful evening, and my best to Punky.
Okay, Bob, see ya.
Later. Yeah, I don't think Punky wants to be sprayed purple. So one day, Secretary Clinton's aide, you know, it's always difficult to buy a gift for the woman who has everything. So her most trusted aide is walking by a pet shop there in New York City, and she says she sees a sign that says "Big Sale Today," and she walks in, and lo and behold, there's this beautiful, beautiful parrot, and it says $10. You know, parrots are very expensive. Yeah. Macaw, African gray, whatever. So she says, "Why so cheap?" And the woman says, "Well, you know, he spent a lot of time in a brothel, and we've sold him a couple of times, and he keeps coming back." "Yeah, okay, I'll try." So she takes the bird home, or takes the bird back to the office, and and it's got a wrapping paper on it, and Hillary unwraps it, and the bird's sitting there, and lo and behold, yeah, the bird definitely spent time in a brothel, because it immediately looks up and goes, all right, who's the new girl? Who's the new girl? And just about then, Bill walks into the room and says, got a bird, do you? And the bird turns around and goes, hi, Bill, hi, Bill. It's the end of the parrot jokes. Okay, no more parrot jokes, none. No more parrot jokes. I want to thank an anonymous person who has matched Tracy's challenge, and added a bit more and asked that it be carried forward. Meanwhile, from the Happy Trails Open Carry Roundup Society, the CEO founder, our buddy Harold, says, I got Friday on the front porch. Kindly fill in the gap. Love, Harold. So, wow. No kidding. Thanks to everyone. Just doing a little quick ciphering and gazintas in my head. That leaves us about somewhere between $150 and $200 bucks to go, I think. Thank you very kindly, Harold, and our anonymous respondent. And thank you very kindly to Tracy and Desiree and Randy. And thank you to Peggy. And thank you to Chris and everyone who has made this possible. Hey, look, it's our buddy Charlie in Tennistan. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, how's it going?
Going pretty good. Hey, I'm sorry I didn't get your pictures earlier of real gas station pizza. I'm so bummed out. They wouldn't download.
Oh, okay.
But as an aficionado of gas station pizza, I got to tell you, I was excited.
Yeah, that came. I don't know if you have them up there. That came from a place called Speedway.
No, we don't have any Speedways here.
Oh, you don't?
Or at least not anywhere near me. But actually, this is my gas station pizza is Hunt Brothers Pizza, which is actually a fine, upstanding, good, God-fearing, Bible-believing Christian pizza company out of, I believe, Tennessee.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I've seen the Hunt Brothers, yeah.
What they do is they send frozen pizza crusts, and then they've got one of those little conveyor belt ovens at the gas station, and they put whatever toppings on it, and they don't charge you extra for toppings, and they run it through the oven, and, you know, gas station pizza.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's
neat. Got gas station wings, too, but you gotta gird up your loins with the armor of the Lord to go after those, Charlie.
Yeah, I was working late last night. I had to work on an ATM at a Speedway, and I started thinking about what you said about being a connoisseur of gas station pizza, and I thought, well, I'll get one.
Well, there are apparently some around here, because I just got a note from Gerald saying, I eat that Speedway pizza all the time. And the funny thing is, the gas station pizza over here is Hunt Brothers, but if I go across the river, I can get Herb Cain 999 Godfather gas station pizza.
Oh. Okay.
I got to say, I've never tried it, just because the whole Herb Cain thing part kind of just puts me off. I don't like the thought that at some point I may actually be, you know, making him wealthier. I'm sure he's got some sort of deferred compensation plan in place.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. What I wanted to talk to you about is back whenever I lived up in Kentucky, I worked at J.P. Morgan Chase in one of their payment centers, and we had a room full of high-speed check sorters. And the people up in Kentucky, I mean, if you have a lot of money, that makes you a good person. And
Calvinism.
I don't look at it like that. I look at it, if you've got a fistful of money and you got it as quickly as you did, how did you get it?
Yes. really. Well, and I mean, and I mentioned the Philip Marlowe novels, Raymond Chandler. He's got a passage like that somewhere along the way in one of his books where he says, no matter, you know, if you're rich, somewhere along the way, you stepped on somebody, you screwed somebody, you slit a throat in the middle of the night, you've done something evil. There is no way to accumulate wealth and do so innocently.
And this is one of the things that really bothers me about Hillary Clinton. I mean, her daughter makes, what, $500,000 a year on Wall Street? There's something wrong there. I mean, I'm sorry.
6,000-square-foot mansion in Manhattan.
Yeah, there's something wrong.
Well, I mean, that's not necessarily something wrong. That's something right with the American system. I mean, all this business about everybody being equal and having equal opportunity, yeah, please. Money, you know, money talks.
Well, what I'm saying is, for her daughter to accumulate that much wealth that quickly, there's something wrong. And for her to give these speeches and not release the transcripts, there's something wrong. And I'm sorry, I want to see Bernie Sanders go all the way to the convention. And if I ever met Hillary to her face, you know, I'd probably show her my center digit and say, you know, sorry, lady, you ain't my cup of tea. You don't need to be the president. You know, I'm sorry.
This is one of those things we have to try to draw some distinction about, Charlie, because I defended her and I defended Bill in the 1990s because the things they were going after them on, the Republicans, were such absolute unmitigated crap. Okay,
yeah.
And that continues. I don't know of anybody inside within the hearing of my voice, and of course, you know, we banned right wingers from the horn a long time ago. But I don't know anybody that's concerned about her email, who's concerned about her server. You know, we've been making fun of Benghazi, the Benghazi addiction, fixation, nervous tick, whatever, of the right wing, for years, because it's a giant nothing burger.
It's the Benghazi has nothing. I mean,
but
that's just something for them to go after her about, you know.
But the thing is, there are real problems.
Oh yeah,
her Iraq vote is a problem. Her bankruptcy bill vote. I think when it came right down to it, she didn't vote for it. She voted present, and that gets counted as a yes vote. The business in Libya where she pushed and pushed and pushed for us to participate in that foreign policy disaster. The fact that she did everything in her power to get her war on in Syria and had to eventually be told no by the President of the United States. And yet, look, the speeches, okay? I don't think there's anything nefarious in there. Charlie, I honest to God don't. I think she went in there and she told, I've said this before, I think she went in there and told all those people sitting over all those plates of rubber chicken that they were the most wonderful people in the world, that they were the only reason we had an economy, and that you know, we have Frisbees and Wheat Checks because of them, and that they all poop ice cream.
And they've all sent our jobs to China too.
Right. But if those transcripts were released, what we'd find out is that if there is a sufficient amount of money on the line, she will be as fawning and obsequious as any 17th century courtesan.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Yeah,
and the fact that people like David Brock don't understand that that's a problem. I don't know if that's a function of privilege. I don't know if that's a function of short-sightedness. I don't know if that's a function of looking past the concerns of the actual go out, get out on the vote, knock on the doors, Democratic base. I don't know, Charlie.
Well, Bernie Sanders, you know, if you look at the way Bernie Sanders has lived, he doesn't have a lot of money. So that tells me he's probably not screwed anybody over. He seems to be a very moral person, And that's something that we hadn't had in the White House, I don't think, in a damn long time. And so, you know, I sit back and I look at Hillary Clinton is narcissistic as all get out. I mean, I can't understand how people support her.
Well, for starters, she's been working on this since she got out of the race in 2008. And as soon as and understand that as soon as she left Secretary of State's office, she had a machine that was already up and running and knocking on doors in all the state Democratic Party apparati. And you add into this something that you and I both know, Charlie. I mean, it's not something we're proud of, but the places where she has done the best are the places that have the poorest educational records.
Well, that's what I was talking about. It's in Kentucky. You know, you get somebody who doesn't have a pot to piss in or a window to throw it out of, and they say, oh, that's a good person. They've got a lot of money. And you're sitting there looking at them like, dude, what's wrong with you?
Right, or that's a good person.
You don't have a pot to piss in, and you don't have a window to throw it out of.
Amen. But doesn't Bernie have a fighting chance in Kentucky?
I hope so.
They haven't voted yet either. I got a feeling she's gonna get straight thumped here in West Virginia.
And you know, I'm sorry. I mean, they had that Democrat up in Southern Indiana. What was his name? Edwin Bayh or something like that.
Yeah, he wasn't Evan Bayh.
He's a Republican. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't understand it. There's a lot of Republicans in the Democratic Party, and Barack Obama's one of them.
Well, that's part of the transformation of the Democratic Party that was wrought by the DLC and brought to full birth by Bill Clinton. They traded, like I said earlier, they traded in the traditional values of the Democratic Party in order to get cozy with corporations and Wall Street. And the price to do that was hanging social justice, economic justice, racial justice right out to dry.
Yeah. And that's a crying shame. I can remember back whenever the Democratic Party, you know, they were, well, I mean, Jimmy Carter was probably one of the most honest presidents we've ever had.
I think so. I absolutely. And of course, he got dirty tricked right out of office.
And Bill Clinton.
And by the way, while we're at it, though, who helped put Ronald Reagan in office? Who had a big hand in that, Charlie? The boomers.
Yeah.
The same boomers that are demanding that we do their bidding and put Hillary in the White House.
Well, I'm sorry. They can go pound sand. I'm not going to listen to them. I'm sorry. I was born in 54. Does that make me a boomer?
Yeah, you're a boomer. But and you know, we're not monolithic. But
yeah.
It does. And but a whole bunch of them have made a whole bunch of mistakes.
And you know, another person that I cannot even stand to hear them speak is Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
Oh yeah, I mean, don't we have some liberal think tank out there, or no, some pragmatic progressive think tank out there that can just give her a job? The business with the payday lenders. I was trying to be even, the payday lender business, I was done with her. Yeah, I used to kind of like her because she would get up and give the other side a little bit of hell once in a while.
And I'm not sexist. I mean, if they had Elizabeth Warren in there, you know, I'd probably listen to her and say, keep going, you know?
Yeah, no, I'm not in search of the perfect candidate. And my support of Bernie Sanders, and I suspect yours, and the vast majority of the people who listen to the Horn Family Community Congregation Conversation, we're not looking for a perfect candidate, and we will not let the perfect be the enemy of the good.
Yeah.
We are in search of the better candidate, and the better candidate, all the way around, is Bernie Sanders. And you know, to hear, you know, to hear privileged 70-year-olds telling the rest of us what we have to do, because, you know, they'll hold their face, they'll hold their breath until they turn blue if we don't. You know, it doesn't carry any weight with me.
No, I'd say, well, okay, turn blue. You know.
Yeah, and that's one of those central distinctions between Bernie and Hillary. Bernie's 73, but he understands that the world belongs to generations that are 40 years back, 40 years
younger.
And,
you know, and when people talk about Bernie Sanders visiting the Soviet Union and all, I just look at him and say, okay, Mitch McConnell was an honorary chair in the China Foundation. What's the difference?
Or the fact that George H.W. Bush's brother Prescott was the president of the U.S.-China Chamber of Commerce at the time that Bill Clinton granted them most favored nation permanent trading partner status.
Yep. So, you know, these conservative people, they just, what they say doesn't hold water with me. They're stupid. I mean, they need to listen to what they say and think about what they say, because they're just as guilty as these pseudo-Democrats, you know, like Hillary Clinton and all. I mean, and Bernie Sanders is probably, he would probably be about like Jimmy Carter was. We'd probably have somebody honest in the White House who'd tell us exactly what it was like, you know.
I think, I love Jimmy Carter. I have a profound degree of respect for Jimmy Carter. But my God, Charlie, that's the kiss of death with a whole bunch of people, is to compare anybody to Jimmy Carter.
Well,
I'm not disagreeing with you. You understand?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I had a note here. I had a note here from Ron up in Canada. He said, "If one looks with even the slightest focus at the imaginary democratic process we're supposed to have, the best possible read we could apply to the Congress and executive branches is that they represent the lowest common denominator of the electoral views of the populace. Throw money and immortal entities into the mix, and it makes one wonder what my grandchildren will experience." And I don't know. Maybe all those boomers who are insisting that we give them their way and give them Hillary, maybe they don't spend a lot of time thinking about 30-year-olds or 7-year-olds. But
well,
I'm 53, and I get to look at a 9-year-old, an 8-year-old, and a 6-year-old a lot. And I love them, and they just charm my soul, if I've got one. And you know, okay, so I got a story here, all right? Granted, they don't live in South Florida, but there's a new study out, and it says that by 2030, okay, let's do some quick ciphering, that is 14 years from now, Miami-Dade County will see the projected number of floods in a year go from 45 to 80. And that there will be a 10-inch rise in the sea level down there by 2030. And by 2045, there will be 380 floods per year in Miami-Dade County. Now, that's not just Miami-Dade County. Look what happened. Look what's been going on in Houston, okay? Most of New Orleans is under sea level and relies on pumps to stay above water. Look at Boston, Philadelphia. Look at New York, Wilmington, North Carolina, Savannah, Georgia, Charleston, South Carolina. There are bad things coming, and the people who are going to have to handle them are being told by a bunch of boomers that they're a bunch of naive idiots for thinking that they would like for their children to be able to have access to education so that they can go to college and learn how to solve these problems. Does that make you, that makes me absolutely nuts, Charlie.
Well, you could always join these premillennial holy rolling idiots and say, well, we'll just start a war here and the Lord will come back and we won't have to worry about all that.
Well, I mean, we can start a war and not have to worry about it, but I don't think anybody's going to enjoy it because there's not going to be anybody gets to worry about it.
I just, I cannot understand these premillennialists that think that if we start some kind of war, that Jesus is coming back.
On his holy Harley, absolutely.
Yeah. I don't know.
Well, Charlie, it's been a great conversation. You have a good evening. Always good talking to you.
You do the same.
All right.
Get you some good gas station pizza tonight.
I'm thinking that may be where I'm headed right after the program. You take it easy.
Okie-doke. Bye.
Bye now. Yeah, I've got a rewards card with my gas station pizza. After I've had 10, I get a free one. Hey, is that you, Jim? Wait, wrong button.
How you doing?
Yeah, there you are. Pretty good. How about you?
Oh, pretty good.
You don't have a parrot joke for us, do you?
Nah, I used to have a macaw. Yeah, blue and gold macaw.
Oh, they're
great,
beautiful.
Bird, but messy.
Yes, yes.
But the thing I was thinking earlier when you were talking about Hillary and earlier when they were saying, okay, Bernie, you know. Okay, you prove your point, stop running. But if you take out the southern states, which Hillary won every one, I think Hillary would be ahead in the, clearly ahead, I think. But don't you? I mean, I can't do.
I haven't done it, but I think it would certainly be a much closer race.
And the only reason they say, well, no, that's part of the stakes. Yeah, I know, but that's the part that the Democrats don't have a snowball's chance in hell of winning, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I think we talked about that a week ago, whatever. I mean, if she wins two or three southern states, I'll be shocked, I tell you.
She's not going to win any southern states, okay?
Yeah. Okay, I know, but I was giving her the benefit.
I mean,
of
well, I offer that up, Jim, with a caveat. Florida's kind of two states. As Doug told us the other night, up there in the northern panhandle, you know, that's lower Alabama, and that's as redneck and right wing as, I mean, remember it was those people that sent Joe Scarborough to Congress for a while. You know, until that aide turned up, you know, all dead in his office.
Funny how that happens.
South Florida is, I mean, you've actually got people in South Florida saying climate change is real, you know, with water and, you know, sharks up around their knees. But, you know, they're saying climate change is real. So, you know, I'd say the Democrats have a fighting chance in Florida. But that business is saying, well, you know, North Carolina's an important southern state. Well, that important southern state is all worried about where people go potty right now. So I'd say that the chances of Kerry in North Carolina are slim, and Slim just rode out of town.
Right.
Okay, Virginia maybe, but that's only because Northern Virginia isn't really Virginia. But down there in the Dominion? No, sorry.
That's you pick the two states, I thought she might have a chance in. Maybe Virginia, maybe Florida. You got a lot of transplants there.
I mean, I'm gonna vote for Bernie on May 10th in my primary, and Bernie will probably win the primary here. I'll be surprised if he doesn't. Come November? Trump's going to carry this state because the Appalachian brain drain has made certain of it.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's like I told you. I'm not voting for. In fact, I talked to my boy's younger lawyer brother just a day or two ago, and he was like, in fact, I gave him a Bernie shirt, motherfucker. But he's like, well, no. You know, well, it doesn't look like Bernie's going to be in. Are you going to vote for Hillary? I said, no. He said, well, I mean, what if she gets the nomination? It looks like she's going to get the nomination. I said, no, because, I mean, I made up my mind while I was talking to you a couple of days, but everything's related to you. But it's like, you know, we were talking about how, what you just said, she's not going to win any Southern states. So it really doesn't matter how I vote. So I may as well, this is one of those chances you get every 4 years to do a protest vote. It's not going to mean shit to a tree, but I'm not voting for Hillary. So I'm going, if Bernie's not in, if Bernie's in, I'll vote for Bernie. But I'm going with Stein, or if, what's his name, runs, Jesse Ventura. If he runs, I'll vote for him, or decide between him and Stein.
And it won't, and like, it won't make a hill of beans difference in Louisiana, Stan.
Yeah, but I mean, I'll feel good. I'll get that 5 minute buzz after the
Dude, I got that. I got that. Dude, I got that quick conscience buzz going.
I did the right thing, you know.
Hey, I got a question coming in. Tim from L.A. wants to know if I go to New Orleans for the Unitarian General Assembly, can I crash at your pad for 4 days next year? He says I'll pay him too if it's cool.
When next year? I mean, you know my nomadic ways. But.
Yeah, you may be back on the wander. You may well have gone walkabout by then.
It's like, yeah, see what happens. I don't know. Yeah.
I mean, how far are you from NOLA?
It's really not that far. It's about, it's right across the lake. So you just get on the causeway. You're in New Orleans in about 40 minutes.
And by the lake, you mean Pontchartrain.
Pontchartrain, yeah.
Yeah, I was using my French.
40 minutes. That's all right. Probably better than mine.
No, my French. No. My French sucketh.
Well, so does mine, you know. But, I just noticed that over the years. And then, like, also, what you were talking about earlier about how, yeah, I noticed that on the Twitter, the Harry bots, they, and I don't really engage them much, but, they are just blind, man. Maybe there are some of those rich, you know, privileged few, and maybe they're really doing well, but I don't think I don't think Hillary probably is going to be offering them much, because I think it's just, no matter if it's Hillary.
Well, okay, we've only got a couple of minutes left, Jim, but here's how it plays. If Hillary Clinton is elected president of the United States and given a choice between her and T-Rump, I would rather have Hillary, okay? I just would. You know, between a case of post-nasal drip and the shingles, I'd rather have post-nasal drip.
Right.
What'll happen is, you know, the reason she cultivates, the reason the Clintons cultivate this
cult-like following.
Well, this loving relationship with Wall Street is so that they can get Wall Street to cooperate when they're in office. Remember how the stock market boomed under Bill Clinton?
Right.
It wasn't an accident.
Right.
You know, they got something for it. They got Glass-Steagall deregulated at the end of the term. That's a nice enough swap. So, you know, the theory is that the market will boom, 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 and all the rich people who supported her campaign will do really well. The rich, you know, that we even had a tax increase under Bill Clinton, and yet the rich got even richer with more taxes on them. That's how they game the system. But the thing is, you can't be running around out there letting people go to college, with no tuition, no matter how qualified they are. Can't be doing that at the same time that that you're asking Wall Street to please pay itself back. You can't do that. Hey, Jim, we got to get out of here. Yeah. We're right at the end of things, but it's been a good conversation.
All right, thanks a lot.
All right, see you. Bye now. Our buddy Jim in Louisiana, Stan, where it's probably also going to be raining a lot for the next 20, 30 years. And then more. Thank you, everyone, We're going to go into Friday on the front porch in decent shape. And thank you very kindly to Harold of the Secret Open Trail, Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society for that. And thank you again to everyone who has responded this evening. Thank you very much to Gerald, who just kicked in a little bit ago. Thank you to our anonymous contributor who answered Tracy's challenge. Thank you very, very much. One and all, thank you to Desiree and Randy. Thank you to Peggy and Chris for making the challenge. Thank you to everybody who's helped us get toward it. You know what? We may beat the Swede again for the fourth month running. Whoa. That's a lot to ponder. Thanks, everybody. Got to get out of here. Back for Friday on the Front Porch tomorrow. Good night, y'all.